Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome in to Under the Hoodies. I'm Mike Pazeski. My wingman tonight is Brian Shipley. Brian, we are sans Bill Kegel tonight. Bill is he's off on business somewhere in Middle America.
Well, I'm sure that Bill is using his Eastern charm on the Midwesterners out there and having a lot of success, but we'll certainly miss him for the next hour.
There is a guy that can sweet-talk anybody. It is Bill Kegel, that's for sure. But you guys are under the hoodies. He's Brian Shipley. I'm Mike Pazeski. A lot to get to. A lot has happened in the last week since we last spoke, most notably, obviously, Donald Sterling and then the fallout from that. Brian, obviously, yesterday, Adam Silver came out and really did what he was pressured to do. You know, he banned Donald Sterling for life, fined him the max of $2.5 million. Everybody was immediately lauding what he had done. Great job, Adam Silver. You know, way to put your mark on the league in your first month on the job. I have a different take on that, Brian, and I'm curious to get your input. He had to do that. It wasn't Adam Silver's decision. It was the players. Come to find out, you know, there was talk amongst the players in the league that they were going to boycott the games last night. So to me, Adam Silver didn't make this decision. He was just a puppet. That's all he is.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that he made the decision that had to be done, because if not, not only could it have been a major black eye for the NBA as far as players not showing up, but let's say they decided to go ahead and play the game and play out the rest of the playoffs. I think doing anything other than what he did yesterday would have been absolutely devastating to the Clippers franchise, not just the players and coaches, but the team's fans. And you know, sometimes we forget about all the other employees that are dependent on the Clippers as their livelihood. And I think it just really would have been ugly as far as loss of sponsorships, which had already happened, players not wanting to go there, maybe needing a new coach, et cetera, et cetera. You know, it was one of those things where it's like, if you don't nip it in the bud here, you know, this mess could somehow even become a bigger mess. So I agree with you. I think he was being the puppet and doing exactly what he had to do, but, you know, that's what the world we live in today.
That is the world we live in, and, you know, the mob mentality. And I listened to an interview with Jason Whitlock today, and, you know, he talked about that, and he had an interesting stance, you know, one that I really wasn't expecting from him. You know, he's very outspoken when it comes to issues of race and equality and things of that ilk, but he really, I don't think he was defending Donald Sterling, but he came at it from the perspective of, you know, invasion of privacy. And without getting too technical, you know, if you're a CEO, it doesn't matter if you're privacy, you know, if you're an owner, anything like that. If you have power, if you have money, it doesn't matter invasion of privacy. You got to watch what you say. You got to watch who you're around. You know, in the era of, you know, thinking about our conversation from earlier, but, you know, in the area of iPhones and stuff, like, you got to be careful what you say. And, you know, it doesn't matter. Nobody's invincible in this day and age, Brian, and I think he found that out the hard way.
Yeah, you're exactly right. A lot of times we make fun of the guys like a Peyton Manning or Tom Brady that always say the right thing and never give you a sound bite and always say a lot without saying anything. But doing anything other than that costs you everything, as Donald Sterling has found out the hard way. That said, all this media outrage and whatnot, I mean, the idea that an 80-year-old owner and a rich old white dude that grew up during the Jim Crow era is a racist, to me, it's about as shocking as hearing that a Big Mac, large fry, and supersized Coke is bad for your health. I mean, do I wish it wasn't that way? Of course. But, I mean, come on. I just can't believe how surprised people were about this, especially with a guy like Donald Sterling that has a well-documented history of not being the most upstanding citizen. But while everybody's on their moral high ground, I mean, if we want to talk about just bad people and getting bad people out of ownership positions, then I think we'd be looking for 25 new owners in the NBA, the NFL, the MLB, and the NHL. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, I just don't really get where all the outrage came from. And, you know, as awful as the things that he said, and like you said, not to get too technical about the invasion of privacy, but, you know, I think his girlfriend is just as awful a person as he is. Clear money grab, clear free publicity grab. Clearly that they were on the outs, and she set them up about as well as you set up the questions on the show for him to answer in that way. And, you know, at the end of the day, as soon as that conversation was over, his life as an NBA owner was done.
And you know what? And he's going to fight this. You know, a lot's been, you know, talked about of his desire to fight battles in the court system. He's no stranger to the courtroom, but I look at it from a different perspective. He bought the Clippers for $12 million. Rumor has it that they're going to sell for over $1 billion. Not to make a joke of the situation, but isn't he the real winner here? What's the punishment? You know what I mean? What's the punishment? He never really, for so many years, Brian, he didn't give a rip about that franchise. He only cared about making a profit. Nope, he didn't sign any big-name free agents, and only in the last 2 years has he given a damn about that franchise, you know, in a respect of something other than making money. So now all of a sudden everybody's like, oh, God, Donald Sterling, poor guy. You know, a mutual friend of ours, Sean, he texted me that today before the show. He feels bad for Donald Sterling because he lost something that he loved. I couldn't disagree with that more. You know, a guy who wants to make as much money as possible, you know, stands to inherit a substantial windfall from this. So I'm not going to cry foul, you know, for Donald Sterling. I applaud him. He's going to make a gazillion dollars.
Yeah, I really don't even know where to go from there because you hit the nail right on the head. I mean, this guy, if you look up ineptitude as far as NBA franchises go, there's a picture of the Clippers right next to it. I mean, that was the black hole for NBA players' career. Was all about cutting costs. It was never about winning. This guy's had a long history of never trusting in or investing in the team as far as front office people, coach personnel, et cetera. I mean, in fact, a few years ago, he fired two guys and then took them to court to try to not pay them as part of their guaranteed contracts. And, I mean, again, like I was saying earlier about he has a long history of this. Like, none of this is surprising to anybody that's followed the NBA.
No.
There's been great articles about him over the last decade about how awful a person he is. Ask Baron Davis about his time with the L.A. Clippers. But it doesn't even go back to Baron Davis. It goes back to when they were the San Diego Clippers, and he was known as the worst owner in sports. And I had to get on a side note, but I'm reading a book by Jeff Perlman right now about Showtime, almost like a behind-the-scenes account of the Dynasty Lakers. And in it, they're talking about how guys would hear they're on the trading block, and at the time Jerry West was the Lakers GM, and they would straight up go to him and say, "You can trade me anywhere. I understand what you have to do what you have to do, but please, under no circumstance, trade me to the Clippers. That is the last place anybody wanted to go." And if you ask me, this is a blessing for Clippers fans as far as they get this guy out as owner and get someone new in there. And it's a blessing for him because he's stuck with a life of house arrest in a giant mansion, and he can go spend some time on, he's probably got a couple of yachts at this point. I mean, he's going to have his the dream retirement that anybody in their 80s wishes they have. So, really, I think we see a lot of winners in this ugly situation.
Yeah, no, there's no question about it. The fans win. The players of the Clippers win. You know, whether it be Magic Johnson or Oprah Winfrey, somebody's going to inherit that franchise for a substantial cost, of course. And the league wins. Adam Silver, everybody wins. Really, I mean, I hate to say there are no losers on an issue as serious as this, but really, everybody really gets their way except for Donald Sterling. And in the end, you know, I would hope that he would realize, and I don't, obviously don't know him, and I never meet the guy, but you would hope that at some point he comes to his senses and the realization that, you know what, this isn't worth it. You know, the owners don't want me here. I can't be here anymore. I've been banned. Let me just take my $1 billion and ride off into the sunset. But, you know, by all accounts, I don't think anybody thinks that's going to happen.
Yeah, let me take the greatest severance package in human history as I go to retreat with my gigantic profits in a league that I really did nothing to help build into the lucrative giant corporation it is today. I think the guy's making out pretty well. And one other winner in all this, you cannot tell me that ESPN, the ESPN executives, ESPN talk show hosts, I have a feeling that they all had an ear-to-ear joker smile the minute this story broke because they're going to beat this drum to death, which is sad to me hearing about the actual games, but I think they're all just ecstatic to have this that they can talk about, get on their high horse, and as Kareem Abdul-Jabbar said in an op-ed piece, have a finger-wagging Olympics, which I thought was just a terrific use of wording by one of the game's greats.
No question about that. And the irony of all this is that the Clippers wouldn't be the Clippers as we know them today, really, if it weren't for David Stern doing them a huge favor by vetoing the Chris Paul trade to the Los Angeles Lakers and basically forcing him to the Clippers. You know, what was once thought as exile, you know, now they are the team in L.A. as the Lakers have struggled this year mightily. But, you know, it's just ironic, you know. It's, and who knows if David Stern would have done the same thing. I talked to a colleague yesterday. I really have to think that the first person that Adam Silver called when this hit the fan had to be David Stern. That's who I would call. There's no question about it.
Right. Well, of course. I mean, that's his mentor with years of experience and a guy that, I mean, if there's ever been a human that seems totally decisive and always knows what he wants to do, it's David Stern. So I totally agree. And I just want to say one thing real quick, Mike, on, you know, this is my microphone, even if it's a small microphone, is that I was really disheartened that this story covered up a guy, because the Los Angeles Clippers were originally the Buffalo Braves as an NBA franchise in the 70s, and the first ever head coach for the Buffalo Braves passed away yesterday, I believe it was, Dr. Jack Ramsey, who I'm sure, like myself, a person like yourself as well, that's followed for the NBA for years. I learned so much from listening to Dr. Jack Ramsey call games for ESPN, several other networks, on Westwood One Radio. He won an NBA title with the Blazers and Bill Walton in the late 70s and was a major character in a best-selling book back then. And that guy has done more for the game of basketball on accident than Donald Sterling and any of these other people have been talking about in regards to the situation. So rest in peace for a great career and great life for Dr. Jack.
Well said, my friend. Well said. You guys are under the hoodies. He's Brian Shipley. I'm Mike Tuzeski. And we're going to switch gears now. I don't want to spend any more time on Donald Sterling, especially after those wonderful words about Dr. Jack Ramsey. Brian, let's talk about the game. And last night, actually the last couple nights, have not been so kind to the top seed in the East and the second seed out West. We talked at great length last week about the Indiana Pacers and what in the world is going on with them. Now it seems the focus and vigor of the NBA world is focused their attention on Scott Brooks and his, you know, alleged horrible mismanagement of that roster, that team, late-game play calling. And if there is any glaring example of his inability to be an elite head coach, is the play that he drew up last night with 2.6 seconds left at the end of that game. A fadeaway three from a guy who's played about 50 minutes in that game is probably the worst play call I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, without a doubt, but I'm a little bit confused right now. You mean there's been NBA playoff games going on? I thought the NBA was just one long recorded conversation, but I guess there's actually live events going on. But all joking aside, without a doubt, in my opinion, this has been the best series. I mean, four straight overtime games. I mean, you can script this better if you're writing a movie about the NBA playoffs. And Scott Brooks, again, does seem outmatched. And we talked about this a few weeks ago, as far as another guy we'll eventually get to, I'm sure, and Frank Vogel, about how if I'm a coach that's about to be on a chopping block and I'm a pretty good coach, I'm not going to be upset at all if the Thunder get knocked out by the Grizzlies, because I think that'd be about as coveted a job as there's ever been. But you're exactly right. I'm watching that game live last night, 2.6 seconds left, which realistically in the NBA is an eternity as far as getting at least a decent look. You know, inbound the ball to Durant for a fadeaway, I mean, that was just awful. And I look a week ago for a coach that I have a lot of respect for in Rick Carlisle, and he drew up such a nice play on the out-of-bounds. They had 1.6 seconds left, and the third option on the play got a much better look as far as a corner three and Vince Carter that he was able to sink. And, I mean, clearly Durant was the first option on the play, and that's it, to have him stand 5 feet away from the inbounds guy at the three-point line. You know, I found it to be awfully perplexing.
And I found what he said, Scott Brooks, the coach of the Oklahoma City Thunder, I found what he said after the game to be very interesting. He said basically, I'm paraphrasing here, that's Durant's play to make. He's, you know, and I don't know, you can twist the words as much as you want, and to me it's, and I don't know, Scott Brooks isn't, you know, really one of those guys to deflect. He's really, you know, taken everything in stride since their NBA Finals appearance, because things have certainly gone downhill since then. But to me it almost seemed as if that time he was deflecting the blame. He's like, listen, I drew the play up, but, you know, really Durant didn't really do what I wanted him to. And, you know, you can read between the lines all you want, but in essence, that's what Durant's going to do. 2.6 seconds left. Yeah, it's an eternity, but, you know, if you're in the heat of the moment, I guess, and I've never, you know, been in that situation, but I have to imagine that what's going through his head is, hey, I got to get this shot up as quick as I can because I really don't have a time to, you know, attack the hoop.
Right, and a way to lay it on him, Scotty. I mean, at this rate, Kevin Durant's going to need double labrum surgery in the offseason from carrying the Thunder 5 years. Like, really, that's the guy after the game that you're going to say didn't make the play? Like, come on. But more, I'll give Scott Brooks, excuse me, I'll throw him a bone here by saying that, yeah, as poor as his coaching's been, I think we've seen a lot of teams where the difference hasn't necessarily been the stars in these games, but the quality of role players that they have. And what comes to mind is a team like Washington, who everybody considers to be young because their two stars are, you know, the youngest backcourt duo in the league, I'm sure, and John Wall and Beal. But they have some pros like a Trevor Ariza, a Nene, an Andre Miller, like some older veteran guys that can come in, do their job, know their role, are dependable. And I just think that the Oklahoma City Thunder role players are just downright dreadful. I mean, after Durant, Westbrook, and I do like Ibaka, I mean, there's just not much on that roster that I would want to pluck from my own team. And anytime you have, I don't care how good your top two are, when Westbrook and Durant combine to take over 50 shots in one game, that's just never a good thing. And that's just not the type of cohesive ball I think you need to go deep into the playoffs.
No, there's no question about that. And, you know, there are some nights that they're on, and, you know, they'd make, you know, 25 of those shots, and the Thunder would win by 10. But that's shots seem to not be falling for them. And in talking to Bill earlier this week, he raised an interesting point. He's like, you know, is this Durant's team or is this Westbrook's team? Because Durant really hasn't been anywhere to be seen. And that was that sentiment was echoed by some other people as well. And it's one of those things. Is he gassed? Because he looks tired to me. You know what I mean? He carried that team for so long during the regular season. And you would have to think that Russell Westbrook is probably fresher at this point, given how many games he sat out this year.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. You know, like I was making the joke about Durant's shoulders hurting from carrying the team, and I think you're right. Westbrook does look a lot fresher. And, you know, back to the role player point I was trying to make, just look at the team they're playing. Memphis has got so many big shots yesterday from Mike Miller, which was downright shocking. And then the type of guy that I just love. And, you know, I coach youth basketball, and players like this always, you know, I have an affinity towards. A guy like Tony Allen that just scraps and claws and fights for however many minutes you're going to have out there. And he's made Kevin Durant's life a living hell this series. And I just feel like Memphis has been able to surround their two stars, their two big guys, Gasol, Randolph, and, of course, Conley, with quality role players like this where, you know, I think you made a really valid point. Durant had to do so much just to carry him through 82 games and an MVP-type season, especially with Westbrook missing an extended period of time, that now you just wonder if he's running out of gas, especially when he has to work so hard at the offensive end to get quality looks while Tony Allen's guarding him. And this is for one of the guys that is effortless in his ability to get open shots, create open looks for himself, and score points. And somebody from the Oklahoma City Thunder on the bench, just do Kevin a favor and step up next game.
And that guy they were hoping was going to be Reggie Jackson, but he really hasn't, you know, evolved into that role. It's almost like a point of diminishing returns. It's, you know, spot duty, he's fantastic, but when you expect him to carry a huge burden on his shoulders. I mean, and Brian, he played 39 minutes last night. He had 6 points. You know, that's not really the contribution that you need from a guy that was, you know, plugged in and expected big things. You know, if Kareem Butler's your fourth leading scorer, I'm going to tell you that you probably don't have a chance to win. That's really where it's
2005, you're screwed.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, he's a fine veteran player. There's no question about it, but you know, you look at a guy like Kendrick Perkins, and I'm sure Oklahoma City fans cannot wait to get rid of that guy. One of the worst trades probably that we've seen in a long time. It really didn't benefit either team. I guess you could say Boston probably got the better end of that deal, but I think that they missed on that. They've missed on a couple draft choices. And it's really, like you said, the role players aren't there. The depth isn't there. And, you know, if Durant's playing 52 minutes, Westbrook's playing 48, odds are good. You know, that series may end in 6 games. I wouldn't want to – I guess I can say you don't really think that they have a great chance of going into Memphis in Game 6 and winning. And I remember last week when I set Bill up on a tee after he's been harping for 3 years about how awesome Memphis is. I'm like, you know what, Bill, I'll finally see you to you, and I'll say, listen, Memphis has a chance. I'm a buyer now. And he's like, no, Oklahoma City is going to win this series. And guess what? They're on the brink of being eliminated. So take that, Bill.
I was thinking that same exact thing. Bill had his moment in the start, and he went to go hide in the shade. But he has been on Memphis for a few years now, and it's easy to see why watching him in this series.
So, I mean, really, I guess, what do you – and we talked about, again, we talked at great length about Indiana last week, and it's really not, you know, worth repeating, but they're also in trouble, obviously. That team has fallen apart. By all accounts, Frank Vogel will be out. Whether it's fair or not, he'll be out as head coach if they do lose that series. Scott Brooks on the hot seat, Kevin McCann in Houston on the hot seat. There could be the potential for a lot of fantastic job openings. In your mind, Brian, which is – I have my opinion. In your mind, which is the best opening? Let's say Indiana, Oklahoma City, and Houston do open up after this playoffs.
I'd still go Oklahoma City because it's a lot easier to find quality role players than it is to find a Kevin Durant and a Russell Westbrook.
Yes.
So I would probably still go Oklahoma City. You know, I've never done a bigger 180 on a team than the Pacers. Last year I loved them, couldn't watch enough of them, and right now I just hate them. I hate that team. I don't know if I'd want to go anywhere near that locker room that seems to be infested with a lot of different cancers right now. And Houston, you know, I didn't really watch them that much this year, and I had heard a lot about James Harden not being a very good defender, and then after watching him dog it the other night to go down 3-1, I'd want nothing to do with him and Dwight Howard as my franchise pieces. So I think far and away Oklahoma City would be the best out of those three.
And neither of those guys, you mentioned Harden, you mentioned Dwight Howard, neither of those guys are Bulldogs. You know what I mean? Neither of those guys are, like, as bad as the situation is in Indiana, neither of those guys are David West. You know what I mean? They're not going
right.
to scrap, claw, and fight. You know, they're not Zach Randolph. They're not DeAndre Jordan. I don't know if you saw what he did to Draymond Green last night in the opening 2 minutes. But he literally ripped the ball out of his hands twice, threw him on the ground, and dunked it. That's the kind of guy that Houston needs, and they don't have that. Dwight Howard's not going to be that guy. We've seen that over the course of his career. And James Harden, as fantastically skilled as he is, he's not that guy either. They need a bulldog on that team, and they just don't have it.
Yeah, that's a fantastic point. What I like to call Dwight Howard, guys like Dwight Howard and James Harden, who, again, are extremely talented, but I think they're products of the AAU environment, which just teaches kids that just get your own, do what you got to do to enhance your own reputation. Defense is an option, not a necessity. And the other night, I don't know if you stayed up for the game, but it's the fourth quarter, 3 minutes left, and Reggie Miller hit the nail right on the head. They're down by two, and James Harden's upset because he's not getting the opportunity to close the game out. And the play calls for him to throw a pass down to Dwight Howard. And you can tell the way he threw it. It was like watching a child that was mad they had to give up the ball and threw a half-hearted pass to him. Dwight Howard then gets blocked, and the ball's going the other way. And I have never in my life seen a worse effort of a guy. And you tell, again, I coach youth basketball, stop the ball, stop the ball. James Harden threw his hand up at the guy dribbling past him and then turned around and just watched him from half court go down for a wide-open layup. And it's like, if you think you're winning the playoffs with an effort like that, you're crazy. And again, with a guy that athletic and skilled on the offensive end, defense, he should be just as dominant because defense at that point is all about effort and attitude when you have that type of athletic ability. And I think what we saw is that his effort and attitude is just beyond atrocious.
Well, I promise you, Brian, and I promise the listeners, that you will always get effort and attitude out of us. You guys are under the hoodies. He's Brian Shipley. I'm Mike Pazeski. Talking a little NBA right now. And Brian, I forgot to mention the Knicks opening, and Steve Kerr has been rumored, to be really the guy to take over in New York. But if you're Steve Kerr, don't you need to wait this out and see what your options are? Because as great as Carmelo Anthony is, I think I'd rather coach Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook than Carmelo Anthony and a bunch of guys that can't play defense.
Yep. Potential aforementioned jobs that we discussed, none of those have a 10-time NBA championship coach looking over their shoulders from the GM box.
Right.
I don't
exactly
care how close relationship Phil or Steve have. This is Phil's really probably going to be his last chance to put his blueprint on a team. And if he thinks he needs to be the one to coach with his ego, I think there's no doubt about it, he'll be going down to the sidelines. So I know Kerr and Phil Jackson are tight, and I think under Phil's leadership, it could be a good job. But I think if I have the leverage that Steve Kerr has right now, I would wait it out and see these other jobs that open. And on a personal note, I hope he doesn't take any of the jobs because I love listening to that guy on NBA and NCAA.
Oh, he's fantastic.
He's really good at his job.
Yeah, there's no question about that. Got a couple minutes left here in this segment, and you mentioned Washington earlier, and you know they, along with Miami, are really the only two teams to more or less coast through the first round, and really the path to the Eastern Conference Finals is laid out perfectly for them. You know, Brooklyn and Toronto were beating the hell out of each other, and here's Washington. You know, we just played five games and with relative ease, and now we get to take on one of those guys, and they're going to be all battered, bloodied, and bruised. I don't
right.
know.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mike. I'm sorry.
No, I don't know if it's not a sexy Eastern Conference Finals by any stretch. But I don't think the world should sleep on Washington at this point. They have a lot of young talent mixed with the veterans that you mentioned before, and they're hungry. They got as long as Nene isn't headbutting anybody, you know, they got the interior presence down low to really give Miami and anybody else fits.
I agree, and all year this year, all I've been saying is once the Knicks were done, which was about 3 weeks into the season, I thought to myself, all I want to see is a Pacers-Heat series, because last year that was some of the best basketball I've seen in years. That's all I want. I don't care who wins the title. I just want to see that. And if you would have told me in December, January, February, March, even earlier this month, that I would prefer a Wizards-Heat Conference Finals, I would have said you are absolutely insane. But watching the Pacers, like I said, I went from loving that team. I hate them. I just hate them. When's the last time or the next time you're going to see a one seed down 30 at home in Game 5 to an 8 seed that had a losing record this year and has been stuck in mediocrity for as long as I can remember? I mean, you want to talk about just dogging it on the floor and having no chemistry at all. I mean, it's just disheartening. And
you,
I totally agree. I think
I don't mean to interrupt
Wayne Wade's
you.
Old
I don't mean to interrupt you. You can talk about bad matchups all you want, and that's what everybody says. Oh, Atlanta's a really bad matchup for Indiana. They're an 8 seed, losing record. They didn't want to make the playoffs. They tried everything in their power to not make the playoffs at the end of the season. The Knicks were just worse than they were. And like you said, they were beating the 1 seed, who was a favorite for the Eastern Conference Finals all year. That's all anybody talked about from week one, is how the Heat and the Pacers was a foregone conclusion. Don't give me a bad matchup. You're the 1 seed. Take care of your business. Unless you're in the Western Conference, I give San Antonio a pass all day, every day. Dallas is a fantastic team. You know, they're one of the best 8 seeds in the history of the game.
Without question, on the opposite end, the Hawks are one of the worst 8 seeds in the history of the game. This is not a good basketball team at all. I knew that everybody was talking the Pacers are going to have trouble heading the playoffs or going on a downward slope. And, yeah, that was obvious. But I thought, you know, they'll be able to flip a switch on and at least be able to take the Hawks down in 5 games at the most. And now they're 1 game away from elimination from the Atlanta Hawks, which would really suck for the second round of the playoffs, because I do not want to see the Hawks play any more basketball games this year.
I don't think anybody does. But – listen, they at least have 2 more. There's no doubt about that. You guys are under the hoodie. He's Brian Shipley. I'm Mike Pazeski. And, Brian, we're going to switch gears, and I'm just going to set it up on a tee for you, sir, because I know how much you love the NFL draft, and really, thank God we're a week away, because I think we're all kind of getting draft fatigue at this point. But something that we really haven't talked about a lot in breaking down players and analyzing, you know, who should go where, what team should take who, we haven't really talked about potential busts, and there's always a couple in the first round. There's no question about it. And we're going to start on the offensive side of the ball, and a guy that, you know, everybody loves. They love his size, they love his speed, they love his hands. It's Kelvin Benjamin, the wide receiver out of Florida State. You're not so sold on him. Why is that?
Yeah, and just to say, too, I think I might have the vaccination for draft fatigue. As excited as I am for next week, I'm a little disappointed that that's going to be the end of the process. But the reason I'm a little not sold on Kelvin Benjamin is a variety of reasons. We've seen other big wide receivers like himself come into the league the last few years after solid college careers. And granted, they didn't run as fast as Kelvin Benjamin, but, I mean, a 4.6 at 240 is terrific, but that's not also blowing anybody away. But the USC guys like Dwayne Jarrett, Mike Williams, all those Jacksonville Jaguars receivers they drafted years ago, like Reggie Williams from the University of Washington, we've seen a lot of big guys struggle because they're not able to separate due to their lack of quickness. That's one reason, and that's a tangible reason. An intangible reason that I'm worried about him is the guy's 240 pounds, which means he could easily have to become a tight end soon if he continues to get bigger. I mean, this 240, he's not a rocked up 240. There's some fat on those bones, and that would worry me tremendously, especially when you consider the fact that there's a lot of questions about his work ethic, such as the report that he blew off a scheduled workout with one of the NFL position coaches. Again, that would really worry me. And also, despite having, I know E.J. Manuel didn't set the world on fire in college, but he was good enough to get be a first-round pick in the NFL. And yet, we didn't really hear much from or about Kelvin Benjamin until this year when the offense kind of flourished. And he had a terrific yards per catch, but I think he only had 52 or so receptions. And I just think if you're drafting this guy to be a number one receiver, you're going to be awfully disappointed in a few years. Although I will admit he does have some tremendous potential.
The scouting report you gave, except for being not muscular, really reminded me of David Boston. I don't know if you remember him from back in the day. Physique, tremendous size, but really just too damn big to be a wide receiver.
Yeah, those ankles couldn't support those steroided out muscles, that's for sure.
Correct. You are correct, sir. We're going to stay on the offensive side of the ball. And Andre Williams, running back, Boston College, despite a fantastic senior season and a Heisman finalist, you think, Brian Shipley, he has the potential to be a draft bust. Why is that?
Yeah, and this is a couple of reasons. I almost felt bad putting him on there because if you can't find it in your heart to root this guy to excel, then there's just something wrong with you. I mean, he's a stand-up a guy as they come and carry the rock tremendously for a Boston College team that wasn't very good. I mean, to think that a guy from Boston College was a Heisman Trophy candidate last year is pretty surprising when you think about it. But I just don't think he does anything special. I think he has terrific vision but doesn't have the burst that you look for from a potential starting running back. He never, ever caught passes out of the backfield. And at the combine, and again, I mean, I know it's just one workout, you're not trying to draw conclusions, but my God, he looked like a fullback out and trying to run pass routes and catch balls. So that means you're never really going to be able to use him on third downs or as a shotgun back or any of the ways that the teams like to use guys every now and again. So what you're looking at is a guy that you're drafting to run the ball on first and second down. And, you know, quite frankly, I just don't think there's much value for guys like that as much as I love running backs. So I think ultimately you're looking at a guy that at best, in my opinion, will be a future backup running back and a guy that will always know his role, always know the offense, always be ready to step in when the other guy needs a breather, but not a guy that I'm looking to do big things in the NFL and the type of guy that usually gets replaced pretty quickly in the NFL because, as we know, running backs, they have short shelf lives.
You talk about running backs and how they have short shelf lives, but you also talked about how important it is that running backs can catch balls out of the backfield. And one of your guys that you have really undervalued, two of them actually, running backs, Lace G. Strunk out of Baylor and David Flewellen out of Toledo, tried to say that many L's at one time. But why do you think that those guys who didn't really have as heralded of a college career as Andre Williams, why do you think that they could be better pros and are really undervalued on the draft board?
Well, here's where I'm going to be a hypocrite because Lace G. Strunk from Baylor never caught the ball very much on the backfield either. But the difference between him and Andre Williams and why I think that he's undervalued is that he is just electric with the football on his hands. And you watch that spread offense in Baylor, and when they gave that guy the ball in space, there was a potential for the play to go to the end zone every single time. Not to mention he's a recruit from Oregon during the Chip Kelly era, and if you don't
Correct.
Blow up a stopwatch in a 40-yard dash, they're not recruiting you in the Chip Kelly era at Oregon if you're an offensive player. So I think a guy like that with tremendous athletic ability, if you can get him, you know, work on his hands, work on his route running, he has the natural ability to do so. He just needs some work at it because he wasn't asked to do that much in Baylor. And I think he can be the type of guy that you find a way to get him 8 to 12 touches a game, and he can drastically impact the game. Unlike a guy like Andre Williams, where I think he's going to be more like a 3.5 yards in a cloud of dust type of back. And as we've seen in the new NFL, you know, those guys just aren't as valuable as a guy like Seashunk could be. And now my man David Flewellen, you know, full disclosure, my buddy Jamal, his older brother, went to high school with him. Jamal is also a terrific football player, and he's also a fellow Lockport native. But I'm telling you, I watch Toledo every time. They were always on Tuesday night again on ESPN. And unlike his brother, he has NFL-type size. 6'2", almost 230 pounds. Super fast, averaged over 6 yards a carry his last couple of years at Toledo. And I think that if you give this guy a chance as a late-round prospect from a small school, he can follow in a few years from now when everyone's saying, oh, my, what a steal he was in the sixth round, a la Alfred Morris a few years ago for the Redskins, even though I don't think their games are similar. I think he can be that type of guy that could potentially be an NFL starter. And at the very least, he has some punt return ability and experience. So while he's learning the NFL, getting used to the NFL speed, reading the NFL blocks, et cetera, he can help your team out on special teams, either in the kickoff returns or punt returns. And he has the potential to be a starter as a late-round pick, much like another Western New York native, James Starks, was for the Green Bay Packers a few years ago when he really helped them win that Super Bowl, coming out almost out of nowhere to solidify their run game for the playoffs.
No question about that. And really, the defensive side of the ball is perhaps as more important than the offensive side. I think we're starting to see a shift in that. You know, where Seattle wins, San Francisco, really those teams have built around young quarterbacks, but have really just loaded the defensive side of the ball, you know, to try to keep up with the high-paced offenses that we've seen recently. And we're going to talk a couple cornerbacks here real quick, Brian, before we do bring Phil Shipley in to get his take on Donald Sterling and to continue the NFL Tournament of Mike, where I try to pick a favorite team so I have something to root for on Sundays. But potential bust, you have Justin Gilbert, and undervalued, you have two guys, really. Darquez Dennard, who I love out of Michigan State, and LaMarcus Joyner out of Florida State. Give me a reason why not Justin Gilbert, and give me a reason why Darquez Dennard and LaMarcus Joyner.
Well, let me preface this by saying that I do like Justin Gilbert. I just don't like – I think it's too rich where he's talking about going in the draft, which is seemingly going to be a top 15 pick. And if we're talking pure athletic ability, I would call Justin Gilbert Pat Peterson light, because if you watch this guy return kicks and punts, he is just an electric athlete. But I think what we've seen over the years is that it's not necessarily the best athletes that are the best corners. It's the guys that understand the nuances of the game. It's the guys that understand how receivers are trying to set them up. It's the guys that understand how play callers are setting them up and how to function in a defense. And we saw Justin Gilbert get burned a lot his last couple of years, especially his junior season at Oklahoma State. And I worry that a guy that's gotten away with just being more athletic than other players throughout his high school, college career is now going to get to the NFL where everybody is athletic who you line up against. And so my question to him is, are you going to be able to learn the nuance of the game in order to become a shutdown corner? And right now I just don't see shutdown corner skills, even though he has the potential to have those shutdown corner skills, if that makes sense.
But it's not nearly as glaring as the NBA, but, you know, the draft is all about potential. And, you know, he will certainly be a high draft pick, but it's one of those things. It's like, can he develop? Can teams really take that chance? You know what I mean? Do you stash him as your nickelback? Do you do something like that? You know, if you're taking him that high, you really, I don't know, can you stash him at that point as a nickelback and just hope that he evolves into a shutdown corner?
Yeah, I think you can, because he's going to help you out more than just as a nickelback, because, as I said, the guy is electric with the ball in his hands, and he could easily be one of the best punt/kick returners in the NFL as soon as next year.
Right.
I mean, that's how good he is. So I do think there's value, secondary skills that he can help you out with, even if he never develops. But my goodness, if I'm taking a corner in the top 15, I want a guy that I can line up across from the other team's wide receiver and not worry about him for 17 games a season or 16 games a season. And I don't know if Gilbert's that guy, at least not yet.
Only time will tell, my friend. We only have to wait 8 more days. I can hardly wait.
Me neither.
Now, do you have a draft party or anything like that, or you just kind of like sit at home and just, you know, start in all your glory with pizza, beer, wings, whatever you got?
Yeah, usually just in my glory. Sometimes I'll go and watch it at a friend's house, but usually I like to be able to focus and figure out who's still the best players available, whose drafts I like so far, who's going here, who did I have rated high that's not being drafted, who did I not like that's being drafted high, and stored in the memory bank to see if I was smart or an idiot a few years down the line.
This is why you need Twitter. You're like the only guy I know that doesn't have Twitter. This is why you need it,
because
the world needs to hear your voice, sir.
Well, thank you, sir. I appreciate that. And real quick, before we forget, I do want to talk about the opposite end of Gilbert, and that's my man, Denard from Michigan State, who I know you like him a lot, too, when we were talking about him earlier. Reminds me of a young Antoine Winfield, and I usually shy away from short corners that have questionable speed, like Alphonso Smith, a Broncos bust a few years ago. But this guy plays with tremendous balance and always looks to be poised and under control, which is exactly what I like in a corner. I think the difference between the great ones and the not-so-great ones are the not-so-great ones sometimes look like they're running with their hair on fire, where a guy like Denard and Darrell Revis, they always look like they're jogging at half speed, yet are always in the hip pocket of the wide receiver. And I think that guy, despite his limitations, he's a terrific tackler, and I would have no bones about it if my team took him in the top 15.
Now we're going to bring in a guy who I think would be poised if he was running around with his hair on fire. Bill Kegel, how are you, sir? Maybe not. Maybe
Cleveland, Ohio.
There he is. Hey, I wasn't sure. If
yeah,
he was
there he
fire.
Is.
That's why you weren't talking.
Yeah, that's why. I'm shocked you didn't pick up me screaming like a little girl.
Don't invest money with Jimmy Haslam when you're out there, buddy. Just don't do it.
All right, well, my last $70 went into my liver, so I'm good.
Fantastic. That's great. That's always great news, you know? Just why not invest in your liver?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, I was investing in my liver, I think, after what I did to it last night. But even still, I am excited to be on. Very, very, very happy to get to the NFL Tournament of Mike, and I'm happy with last week's results.
You should be. You should be. While we have you on, you know, obviously we talked at great length, Brian and I did, about Donald Sterling, and a lot of basically everybody I talked to has a differing viewpoint on this. And Bill, I'm curious just to get your take on it. What was the first thing you thought when you heard the recordings and when things started to really transpire and roll downhill this weekend?
I thought, because I listened to all of it, and I thought that he was definitely baited. I don't think this is something – he wouldn't have been baited if it's not something he was kind of saying before. So I definitely think that woman was out to sabotage him, and, I mean, I think that's pretty much common knowledge at this point. But I do agree with the suspension. I'm not sure where you guys stand on that. Brian, I think I do a little bit with you, but Mike, I'm not sure where you stand, but I thought this suspension was probably perfect. I don't think it could have been, the punishment. I don't think it could have been put better, I think. I really think that's he got exactly what he deserved.
I don't really pay attention too much to the punishment, really, because I don't – once the damage is done, and we talked about this before you came on, Bill, once the damage is done, there was really only one thing that Adam Silver could do, and he did it. You know, really, for a lack of better terms, you know, the players held the players, the other owners, the fans, the sponsors, they really controlled it. He was just the puppet, and I made that analogy earlier. You know, given that, it doesn't matter if he was baited, and I don't think that Donald Sterling is running around just ranting and raving and spewing his racist views to the world. I don't think that for a second.
I disagree. I think that she would have been recording had she not known that something like that would have tipped him off to have him go on this tangent.
Okay. I don't know. You might be right. No, there's definitely some validity to that.
I mean, I don't think he's walking around championing his thoughts, but I definitely think she's heard it a time or two, enough to know what to do to get him to say it.
I think she can get a lot of old men to say whatever she wants them to say based on her status quo. But
generally that takes place earlier in a relationship. I think they were together for a while.
He was just basically giving her whatever she wanted. If I were her, why would you leave? Why, you know? I guess right. What I don't understand is why she's even doing this in the first place. What does she have to gain? I mean, she already – actually, you know what? I guess I do know what she has to gain. She's getting her 15 minutes of fame right now, and plus she might get a whole lot of money out of it.
Well,
there's not
going
to be a sex video in 6 weeks, then I would be shocked if there wasn't a sex video involving her in the next 6 months. I mean, this is her chance to capitalize – of someone who no one knew her name 4 days ago, and now She'll either get a reality show, a sex tape, or whatever else these people that have no real ability, talent, or intelligence are able to do to get rich and famous in Hollywood.
Brian, I think you can see into the future. I'm convinced.
Oh, I think Brian's spot on.
Yeah.
I tell you what, guys, it is what it is. At the end of the day, Adam Silver basically had to appease his constituents. He had to appease the owners, the fans, the sponsors, and he did the right thing. He did the only thing that he could do, and, you know, and at the end of the day, I think we all just need to sit back and kind of take stock in what our own views are. You know what I mean? I think moments like this really allow for a lot of self-reflection and self-improvement, really, because I don't think anybody, you know, hopefully nobody buys into what he says, but we know what happens. There's a lot of hate in this world, and unfortunately, this is something that we cannot get away from, but we are going to get away from it for the next 10 minutes or so as we break in to round 2 of the NFL Tournament of Mike. You guys are under the hoodies, joined by Brian Shipley, Bill Kegel from Cleveland, Ohio, hopefully preserving his liver for one night. All right, guys, we're going to do the West region. And Bill, I don't know if you have that in front of you. Do you still have that?
Yeah, I do.
Well, let's get right down to it. I can't wait to be peer pressured into selecting things by Brian again. He did a fantastic job last week.
He really did. All right, this is going to be the North region. And our first two teams are the Steelers versus the Cleveland Browns, ironically. Again, ironically.
How did they even make this?
Well, you have to put them on there. But you know what? I'm looking at these 8 seeds, and I was in Buffalo when the Bills were the 8 seed last week. I'm in Cleveland this week. Next week, I think I'm going to be in Oakland. And the week after that, spoiler alert, I'm going to be in Jacksonville, apparently. So we'll see if we can round out the quadfecta or whatever. And I'll never say that.
Brian,
I'm sorry.
Brian, is there any... is there anything positive you can say about the Cleveland Browns? Anything at all?
I think Cleveland is a terrific city, terrific football history, terrific fans. The dog pound is awesome. But I think Jimmy Haslam is just as big a scumbag and awful person as Donald Sterling.
Hey-o.
I think that I hate all the shakeups they did at the front office. I like Mike Pettine as a coach, the Bills defensive coordinator a year ago. He's a man's man that just wants to do whatever it takes to help the team win. But all in all, I can't stand it. Jimmy Haslam's at the opposite end of the spectrum as far as reputable owners to the Rooneys, who obviously own the Steelers. So I think on that factor alone, I'd probably be going Pittsburgh. Plus, if you ever go to a game there, you can get a Permani Brothers sandwich, which was worth the trip in itself. So,
never had one. Not going to lie, never had one. But here's the thing. The one good thing about Cleveland is somebody knew what they were doing, because somehow they convinced the Colts to give up a first-round pick for Trent Richardson. So somebody in that front office, you know, is clearly a swindler.
He's now a member of the Patriots, which is a bad sign. If you fire someone and less than a week later they work for the New England Patriots, you made a mistake.
You definitely made a mistake. With that said, I'm going with the Pittsburgh Steelers. No reason anybody should pick the Cleveland Browns in any sort of bracket. So I'm going with Pittsburgh because I really want a sandwich.
All right. Got another good one for you here. The Green Bay Packers versus the Detroit Lions.
Wow. This is an interesting bracket as far as storied traditional NFL franchises. And, I mean, the Packers, again, great atmosphere, Lambeau Field, cool uniforms, franchise quarterback, but I'm going to go against the grain and say go with the Detroit Lions. I mean, the city of Detroit needs all the help it can get, and I'm not even trying to be funny with that. Go with the Detroit Lions. Young quarterback Matthew Stafford, who I think if he really puts in the time and effort to get down the nuances of the game, the sky's the limit with that guy's terrific right arm. And plus they have one of the funnest players, not just of this generation, but in NFL history that you can watch every Sunday in Calvin Johnson. So I'm saying go for the Detroit Lions over the Green Bay Packers.
And Titus Young jerseys are on clearance, Mike. You can get a Titus Young jersey for $10, I think.
And all proceeds go to mental illness.
As appealing as that sounds, because, God, I really wish I could get my hands on some Titus Young gear. But the history that the Green Bay Packers have, the fan base, the stadium, I'm going to go with the Packers. And listen, I'm not trying to be a front runner, really, because I feel like at times I can be accused of being a front runner, but I'm not. I like Aaron Rodgers. He's not one to pony up on bets if he loses, but I'm not going to hold that against him. And I really like what they're doing. They really do need to improve the defensive side of the ball. Probably have one of the better young running backs in the game right now with Eddie Lacy. And I like McCarthy. I like what they're doing, so I'm going to go with the Packers over the Lions.
Understandable.
He's so depressed. He's like, oh.
Understandable. Right. My heart seldom worked, that's all.
All right. Next round. You know what? I think I'm going to misseed at the Lions here because I got the Ravens versus the Bengals, and I actually think I should have switched the Lions and the Bengals. The Bengals have won more recently, so that's why I put them in the six, but I think I might have misseeded that.
If there was a theme for today's show, I think it would be scumbag owners that own professional franchises. So while we're on that line, let's talk about Brown, the owner of the Bengals, who I think is just an awful human being. Totally screwed over the county that the Cincinnati Bengals Stadium is, where they are cutting social programs, government jobs, left and right, in order to finance a team that spends their money the same way I do on a week-to-week paycheck. I mean, this is as frugal an owner as there is. I would not nothing.
Let me ask you a question.
The Cincinnati Bengals.
He's also their GM, if I'm not mistaken. I always think that's a horrible idea.
He is. They've had some good drafts, but I don't like starving Marvin Lewis much either. I don't like Andy Dalton. I love a lot of the players on their defense. I like A.J. Green, Gio Bernard. But I've been to Cincinnati, Mike. Just do yourself a favor. I don't even care who they're playing in this matchup. I would not be choosing the Bengals.
Now I'm going the Ravens. They're close. And, guys, in a moment of really heartfelt clarity here, my girlfriend likes purple. She's always wanted to be a Ravens fan, so I think somewhere deep down subconsciously, I think I'm going to go with the Ravens on this one just because of her.
I respect that. Those all-black uniforms, especially under the lights, look terrific. So I think that's a plus on your side as well.
Speaking of purple, we have the Vikings, actually as a fifth seed, but I helped my lead in there with the purple thing, versus the number four seed Bears.
I tell you what, you guys don't need to convince me. There's no convincing on this one. Adrian Peterson is one of my favorite players ever, and I'm actually going out there to see them play this year, to see them play the Patriots in September, so I'm definitely going to pick them. I really wish they could get their quarterback situation figured out, but Adrian Peterson is probably one of the better running backs I've seen in my lifetime, so it's a clear-cut win to me. I can't stand Jay Cutler. I don't like his body language. I've never liked him as a leader, as a quarterback, a franchise-type quarterback, so I'm going to go the Vikings here in a clear-cut pick for me.
I mean,
all right.
That same move. And plus, I think if there's one guy that deserved an NFL head coaching job 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago, it's multiple hard knock superstar Mike Zimmer, who I just love and think will do a terrific job with the Vikings and really make them a fun team to watch and a miserable team to play against.
All right, we second round of this. We're just gonna finish this bracket out here. We, the Pittsburgh Steelers versus the Minnesota Vikings.
Whew, that's a tough one.
Wow. That is a tough one. I mean, we see we got a lot of people who like the Vikings, but my gosh, the Steelers versus the Vikings, that is tough. Mike, I'm not going to offer you any advice this time. I'm leaving you hung out to dry.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you. With that said, I think I'm going to go Pittsburgh. As a kid, growing up, watching football with my dad, he was always a big Steelers fan. He's been a Steelers fan for as long as I can remember. Other than Adrian Peterson, I have really no allegiance to Minnesota or the Vikings, other than the fact that Sam Ponder is one of the most beautiful women on the face of the earth. I'm still going to go Pittsburgh here. They're close. The stadium is beautiful. The franchise has rich history. And, it's one of those things. I don't know if you guys have ever been to that stadium, but it's absolutely fantastic. So I'm going to go Steelers over the Vikings with this pick.
Hey, real quick tangent. Let me tell you, Pittsburgh is sports venues. They haven't figured out, man, because PNC Park is another that's my favorite sports stadium that I've ever been to. It's fantastic. Have you guys been? Brian, I know you have.
Other than Wrigley Field, that's my favorite baseball stadium as well.
It's absolutely beautiful, guys. And Heinz Field is even better. I haven't been to a Steelers game down there. I got down there for a Notre Dame Pitt game back when Larry Fitzgerald was there, and it's just fantastic. The atmosphere, the bridges, the water, it's just fantastic. It's really unrivaled, in my opinion, by many.
I agree. All underrated right. City to visit. A lot of good food spots there.
Yes. All right. Next is Packers versus Ravens.
Wow. This is another tough one.
Who created this bracket?
There's some heavy hitters in this bracket. This was like that bracket that had Kentucky, Louisville, Wichita. This is tough.
The same people.
The heavy hitters, Alexander and Catalano, getting some run here on Under the Hoodies. We're going to go with, I think I'm going to go Ravens with this one, just because of the local flavor. And, I like Flacco. I don't like Harbaugh. I like Flacco. Not a big Ray Rice fan. But it's the local flair. I don't know if you guys have ever been to that stadium either. Baltimore is another city that has their sports venues figured out. And I think in an easy pick for me, I'm going to go the Ravens over the Packers.
All right.
I like
and then,
that. Ravens are fun to watch every year, that's for sure.
And then the last, the championship, Steelers-Ravens. Great.
If it isn't the best rivalry of the last 8 years, making its way to the Under the Hoodies show, this is a terrific ending right here. I mean, quick side note, if my favorite team was playing, let's say, 3 or 4 years ago, I would much prefer to watch the Steelers-Ravens if they were on, because that was must-see television between two, once again, heavy-hitter teams. But I know who I would go here, but I'm interested in hearing who Mike would go with here.
Phil, do you have anything to say before I make my final decision?
I mean, Ryan's right. That was one of my three favorite non-Giant Super Bowl football games I've ever watched in my life. It was a fantastic
game.
The AFC
Championship game was just unbelievable.
It was great.
I think I got a slight concussion from watching it. There was so much hitting in that game, but
maybe that's what's contributing to all your vitriol and anger. My God, you're like Joey Crawford right now.
I'm sorry. Odors drive me nuts, in case you couldn't tell.
Bill, I know you need to go, and we have about 2 minutes left. I'm going to make this easy. I'm going to go Steelers. They're going to make it to the Final Four over the Ravens. It's the history. It's growing up watching them play. It's the city of Pittsburgh. It's the stadium. It's everything. It's the solid ownership. It's big. It's everything. I'm going to go Steelers. They're going to advance to the Final Four. And apparently Bill is in a spaceship right now.
No, I was in an elevator. I was getting back down. I'm so tired. I'm proud. Let me tell you, this was a D-plus performance at best by me, and I apologize.
We were talking about the Bill Kegel charm earlier, and we know that you knocked him dead in there, which we haven't seen many people knock anything dead in Cleveland in a while. So
I'm very, very tired.
We have set up the Final Four. We have two of the Final Four teams. We have the Buffalo Bills. We have the Pittsburgh Steelers. I'm anxious to get this underway next week. I feel like we're getting close to a decision, and I can't wait. And now, what are the terms? Do I have to, like, stick to this for the rest of my life? I hope not, right? I don't have to get, like, a tattoo
or anything.
You have
to buy you have to at least buy a name and number T-shirt.
Guaranteed contracts in the NFL, so we're taking a year is what I vote for.
I think I know a good place to get a name and number T-shirt, so I think we'll be all set there.
Good, Mike. Yeah, don't catch red fever while you're in there, though.
I'll try not to do that. Guys, this has been fun. You guys are under the hoodies. He's Brian Shipley, Bill Kegel. I'm Mike Pazewski. We'll talk to you guys next week. Have a good evening.
Don't forget the waterproofer when you buy that name and number T. Get the waterproofer. Keep it dry.
#Olympia Sports. Good night, everybody.
That's right.